Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome to the Hockey Show podcast with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Chief, I got my my Barstool shirt on, my Connor Bedard 45913, the lottery ball sequence that got us the generational player.
The all-time luckiest lotto combo. It's probably worth to the Blackhawks organization like $500 million. like over 10 years of tickets and revenue and all that kind of stuff. They literally hit a lottery. So those are the numbers. It looks good on you, Pat.
Thanks. So, okay, you just got back from Nashville. You had a lot going on, opening up a bar stool, bar. You had did all your different responsibilities for the shows and whatnot. What was the vibe like as far as, because the Blackhawks fans were really well represented at Bridgestone Arena, certainly for that first round. What was the interaction with Chicago fans throughout your week?
It was awesome. It was, you know, just pictures on the street, people high five, and we had a bunch of them come to our bar. So we had like a little watch party that we started at 5 o'clock at Barstool Nashville. And there was a good amount of Hawks fans there who then left and went into the building. The Blackhawks themselves hosted an after party at Assembly Food Hall, which is like just off Broadway there. I don't know, a ton of just a sea of red. You know, it's a mezzanine level. You know, so everybody was there. And everybody's just over the moon. I think we're all just like ready to fast forward to October because it was a great day, and they got the guy, and everybody's so excited. And then they get Oliver Moore too, who I've had conversations with them going back to last fall that they loved this Oliver Moore. So when Davidson says, "Oh, like we got our guy," and you hear about that often on draft day from GMs across different sports. Oh, like he was way higher on our board. Well, they had him high on the board all the way back in November. So
Chief, they had him 10 on their final board. And you heard Kyle say from the moment he got back to the table after they announced Bedard and went through the pomp and circumstance there, he was basically on the phone trying to move up from 19 to get Oliver Moore. And then as if we thought the luck ended 6 weeks ago with this sequence here, no. Yeah. It just keeps on flowing. They get the fastest skater in the draft, and they don't have to give up anything for it. It comes to them at 19.
Everything's coming up, Kyle. It's just, like he's had quite the year. And I got to meet Oliver Moore and his family at that party, too, and hung out with his older cousins a little bit, like just good Minnesota, just typical hockey guys. Oliver Moore is like he'll be a popular player in this town because he's got some personality, a little quick wit, easy to talk to, and I think he's in a great spot. You know, like a lot of times the first round pick, all the eyeballs, all the pressure is on you. He was, he's a bit of an afterthought, even though he's this great player that, in many years would be a top 10 pick. He doesn't have to have the weight of a franchise of being a first round pick on him. He can go to Minnesota. He's got a room up there with Sam Renzel, who was their first round pick last year. And I think, so Minnesota's going to be, everybody should be subscribing to Big Ten Network this year. They're going to be on TV a lot, and they're going to be a lot of fun to watch for Blackhawks fans. And they'll be in the World Junior and all that too. So I think he's going to be a very, very nice player. And it's one of those things where even if he doesn't become a first line player, he's so fast and so responsible that he'll carve out a role somewhere. He'll be an NHL player. And that's what, we talked about. And you've had this quote other places too, where Kyle's like, you get one NHL guy per draft as the average. Well, they at least have two with these guys. So anything after that, I think is gravy. And I think this team is you know, you can kind of starting to take shape a little bit for the
future. And with some of the moves they made, and we'll get into that in just a second. So do you think Oliver Moore was overshadowed a bit by some of the other U.S. developmental players like Will Smith and Ryan Leonard?
Totally. And you know, Will Smith, he plays a particular style. He plays a little bit of a, you know, more of a slowdown game. Not that he's slow, but he kind of lets things develop. And he's a great playmaker and all that. Oliver Moore, he shoots out of a cannon. So, it you know, it overshadowed maybe a little bit, but top penalty killer for Team USA. You know, and he flashes when he's on TV because the speed is undeniable. And it's not just straight. It's not like that kid from the Mighty Ducks 2, like Mendoza or whatever, where you can't stop or all he does is go in a straight line. Stops, starts, you know, fluid skater too. So he changed of direction. Like he's a joy to watch out there, and a guy who just he works hard. He's a dog on the pucks. So I think he's going to be a very, like I said, a very popular player here on and off the ice.
Okay, so I want to go back to Bedard a little bit. I've been reading anything and everything that's been written on this kid, and it's amazing, Chief. Like, they've got tournaments to Toronto when he was 10 chronicle. Like, seriously. Like, I mean, it's amazing. I don't know how much you got to hear from him while you were in Nashville, but a couple of times on Wednesday night through various interviews, he'd say something to the effect, if I make the team. I mean, like, okay, Connor, I'll play your little game here if you make the Blackhawks. But the point being, no ego in this kid. He doesn't expect any handouts. He wants to work hard for everything. It's been a staple of his since it started. His skills coach is the current Vancouver skills coach, has been with him since he's 5. He's always had to work harder than the next guy because of his size, and it is paid off in droves. The other thing that I didn't know about, and I don't know if you knew about, do you know this kid's never had fast food, doesn't eat fast food?
I did hear that, yeah.
Okay, I'm used to Tom Brady reading, you know, TV12 and that kind of thing, or players transitioning to a clean diet, you know, later to preserve their careers. I've never heard of a 12 or 13 or 14 year old, when they bring pizzas into the room after they win a tournament in Cincinnati, the kid going, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I've got my, I mean,
I got organic apricots at home, so I'm fine.
How does one eat clean in Regina and all these different places where this kid has been playing hockey over the last several years? Like,
I don't know how he did it in Nashville. All they have there is fried chicken. So it's, I don't know how he did it down there either, but you can just tell what kind of guy he is. So I met him briefly to, you know, snap the picture, but then I talked to a couple of his buddies who are in this room, and they were like his trainers. They tell these stories about how he's like just the best kid and the best guy. And one of the trainers was a pretty good hockey player, had a very unfortunate injury, which had a year-long recovery. So didn't see Bedard for a year, finally comes back into the gym where they train, and Bedard gives him like the biggest welcome. How you doing? Miss you so much. You know, asking about his family. Like, he's just one of those types of guys that, like, he wants to do things the right way, but it's not for show. Like, he wants to be a good guy, and he is. And that's how everybody seems to talk about him. And, you know, I met his mother in that room too. Sweet as can be. Like, there, you know, it's just, you could just get good vibes off of people. Everybody that he has chosen to surround himself with seems like a very good person. So I think and I think when you're coming in with all this pressure and to be the, you know, the new face of the league, at least the new face of the Chicago Blackhawks, original six, you're going to have all this pressure and weight of expectation. I think that he is uniquely equipped to handle that.
I totally agree with you. By the way, you've talked about kind of the party atmosphere in Nashville. You got to see the salt shed as ESPN showed it. Dude,
What was that? That
put on a hell of a show. Something like 5,000 fans.
Incredible.
It was amazing. And they spent a lot of and invested a lot of money and time into making that venue feel like a Blackhawks. It felt like the United Center on steroids for a party. Bars everywhere. You had Cornelissen singing. You had Foley doing a Bedard call. It was unbelievable party scene. And I thought that they pulled that off. Who else? Oh, I mean, look, you rub shoulders with Bedard, his family. You saw Oliver Moore. Any Blackhawks brass? Any other people you bumped into that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, I had a nice chat with Danny Wirtz. I love Danny Wirtz. He's just a good guy too, and you can tell he's hungry for it, and he's a guy. And you know, we were talking. I had a tweet about, all right, now the climb begins, and I love the chase. I love the climb. Like, this is, if you're a fan, getting in now, kind of at like the ground floor or something. And you know, I always, you know, there's this quote I heard one time about pursuing things that are meaningful. Well, now it's like there's no more like, of course, they have to build the team and all that. But now there's a path, and you can genuinely pursue your dreams and your goals. And, you know, the Blackhawks, with Danny's the fourth generation now. The other three have been involved in Stanley Cups, and he wants to be that guy and who leads this organization to another, you know, Wirtz led Stanley Cup with him at the forefront. And you can see it when you talk to him. He cares so much about the organization. It just makes you feel good as a fan. And I think doing things like the Salt Shed, which that looked incredible. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, the last several years have been like, ugh, you know, like it's been very, very difficult. And then, you know, but the hunger and the passion for this team in this city is almost unlike anything else. Like, there is like this, it's always kind of percolating. And when lightning strikes, the Hawks in this town, it's incredible.
You know, youth really drives a fan base, right? Like, we saw it in the 08, 09, 2010 days, where the momentum of the team also was reflected in the rinks around the Chicagoland area. Like, You would go into any rink in the Chicagoland area prior to 2010, and there would not be Blackhawks signage or Blackhawks youth hockey camp or what happened. Yeah. There was none of that. 2010 and on, that's all you saw. Every single – and I had kids, you know, growing up in that time, and we were in youth hockey. And what I saw Kane do on Wednesday night, I saw little Johnny do on Friday, you know, trying to do, like, don't do that, Sully. You're not Kane. But that's the way it goes. And all of a sudden, you would go to street festivals in Chicago, and you would see Hawks gear. And you're like, I haven't seen Hawks gear ever during the winter. Now I'm seeing it in July in Roscoe Village.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and so what I saw at the Salt Shed on Wednesday night was, okay, I saw those kids who grew up in the 10s through 16 who are now in college or on the other side of that. They're rocking the Saad jersey or the Hossa jersey coming back. But I saw little 5- and 6-year-old kids with Bedard gear on. So, like, you know, it's starting to regenerate and recycle, and you know, the life continues and moves forward here, and we're kind of getting, you know, another opportunity. Like, we caught lightning in a bottle in 2010.
I can't believe we get to live through it twice.
It looks like it does. Like, we were so lucky then, and it looks like we're at the beginning of that one more time. And God knows where this is going to go with 98 in the mix.
Yeah, and to your point, when I was growing up, okay, like I loved the Hawks, but a lot of my teammates and stuff would be like, I'm a Wings fan because the Wings were awesome. I love the Avalanche. I love Sakic. And like, me personally, my favorite players were not Blackhawks. Like, my favorite player was Peter Forsberg, you know, another Avalanche guy, because nobody cared. The games weren't on. And, you know, I remember, I think I was probably in college or right before, But it was like those Calder, Bell, Arneson teams. And there was one time where they were sneaking up into the playoff chase with that group. And I remember calling into ESPN 1000. They had a big game against the Wings. And the producer laughed in my face for wanting to. He's like, we're not talking. It's, you know, it's the Cubs or whatever was going on. We're talking about that. We're not talking about the Blackhawks. And now it's just 5,000 plus at the Salt Shed, however many down in Nashville, $15 million worth of season ticket sales, you know, since the lottery. You're right. And then to your point about the youth hockey, there used to be this magazine. I don't get it anymore. I'm not sure if it still exists, but USA Hockey. They would send out a monthly magazine, and they would chart youth participation by state. And you saw Illinois go from, like, in the Kane Taves era, go from like that 9, 10, 11 range up to like fourth. You know, it's Minnesota, Michigan, Massachusetts, and then Illinois is like right in that 4-5 range. So that is a real world consequence. And like you're saying, like growing a fan base for generations, and now they get to recycle that. And it's having on ice success obviously helps, but it's inspirational type players. Like, people want to play like Kane because he's fun, and they're going to want to do things like Bedard because he's fun and awesome. And so it's the perfect guy to want to get more people involved in the game because they're exciting.
All right. So on the last podcast, we talked about the Taylor Hall and the Nick Foligno trade. They end up signing Foligno to a 4-year deal. On draft day number two.
1-year deal. It wasn't 4-year. It was
one year. Sorry. $4 million, yeah. 1-year deal. My bad. Yeah. And then on day two of the draft, they acquire the rights to Corey Perry. They sign him today to another $4 million, 1-year deal. Like, just as they kind of built a draft board, it's almost like they built a leadership board of over here, like, okay, we're going to put Foligno. He's rated here. Corey Perry's rated here. And then they went out and got these guys. I heard an interview with Nick Foligno yesterday. And to hear this guy talk about the opportunity to come here, and, you know, his first room was Ottawa, and Luke Richardson was one of the veterans in that group. You know, we know that he was a longtime captain in Columbus. He knew Seth Jones there. Mm-hmm. He knew Connor Murphy there as well. His role in Boston was minuscule. You know, the minutes were small. He had a specific role. It's a championship. It's a ready to run to the cup type of team. You have a specific role in that. He comes to Chicago, gets paid handsomely, but they're telling him, you're going to play on this line. You're going to get more minutes than you've had the last couple of years. You're going to usher in arguably a generational player and help cultivate that room. Like, to hear his excitement at age 35, I was ready to, you know, drive off the road and, like, go get myself a Nick Foligno jersey, knowing that he's probably only going to be here a year or so.
Well, and he's, you know, he's from that family, right? The Foligno's have become one of those names with his second generation, with him and his brother. And you need guys like that to win. There's a reason why Boston, pursuing a championship, wanted Foligno. And because he'll do what it takes. And people are saying, oh, he's 35. He's had, I think, some back problems or whatever. I don't care about that for one second. I want that guy in the room wherever they end up penciling him. He could be on the fourth line. He doesn't even have to play every night necessarily. He's still going to have an impact on this team this year and for the future. He's a perfect guy. Perry, look, I've hated him for 15 years. Can't deny that. But as soon as he beats somebody up for going after Bedard, it's going to warm my heart, and I'm going to be right there with him. I hope they go get Ryan Reeves too. I just want to have have those three veteran tough guys. Maybe bring in Lucic. We'll just have next year is going to be about goals and beating people up. I don't know how good they're going to be, but it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. If you're a fan, and I'll never understand the people who say they don't like the fights. The fights are fun. The fights are a reason to get out of your seat. And I think the Hawks will have a little bit more sand and muscle than they've had in previous years, and it's going to be a fun year. I'm actually also, Pat, I'm starting to think they're not going to be that bad. Like, I don't think they're a bottom five team next year, not with Taylor Hall, not with Bedard. If I think Reichels looks like a nice top six player. I don't, you know, they've added some pieces. They bring back Kurashev. Maybe he has a little bit of an uptick. It just depends on the D. Like if the D can mature with Korchinski, Kaiser, Vlasic, I think they'll all be on the team next year. But I think they're going to be fun. But I think they're going to be, you know, probably picking in that 10 to 15 range instead of 0-5, which I think is fine. I think that's fine.
Yeah,
and it's going to be a fun team to watch.
As long as you, and it looks, by all accounts, it looks like they hit on a couple of players, at least from last year's draft. You mentioned Korchinski, Rinzel, and other. We got Nazar coming down the pipeline eventually. This looks like a promising draft that we just finished up. And I think we've already seen, you know, we talked about the Bedard effect on free agents. Don't tell me that Corey Perry would have signed a one-year deal if they picked
Lucas Carlson
Carlson. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I don't think that those players come here.
No,
I don't think Taylor Hall's excited about coming here if he's on a line, not on a line with Connor Bedard.
Taylor Hall, he's got 2 years left. How old is he now? 29,
30-ish, 31, okay. I think.
So he's probably looking at that and being like, I'm going to have all the power play one time. I'm going to have all the time with this kid, Bedard. I'm going to have way more points playing on the top line, salivating, getting one more big deal because he gets to be a winger with Connor Bedard. I think, you know, like there's a lot of benefit to that. And he's like we said on the other show, to have a guy that was the number one pick himself. And he was in there when it was like, all right, like they had other number one picks, but he was supposed to be the one, like the guy. Like he was probably the best of that. Yakupov, Hopkins, all those guys. Like Hall was the most celebrated guy. So he understands a little bit of that pressure. And he's a guy I've always loved, Taylor Hall, going back to his, you know, World Juniors and Junior and the Memorial Cup runs, because he plays recklessly. And I mean that in a good way. Like he doesn't really seemingly care about his body too much. Like he goes into corners, he goes to the front. So I think we're going to like him here too. So I think things are taking shape. It's a fun time to be a Hawks fan, like we were saying.
Okay. So, you know, we talk all about the leadership and what these guys are going to do to help cultivate, you know, the new culture that has started under Luke Richardson and that continues to get momentum here in year two with him and Kyle Davidson. But there are still, and we debated it on our radio show on ESPN 1000. We debated it time and again on podcasts. Why couldn't they have done the leadership thing with Taves and Kane? So Kyle Davidson was asked about that. Ben Pope from the Sun-Times asked Kyle, what's the logic behind moving on from Taves and Kane, but then bringing in Foligno and Perry for veteran leadership? This is what Kyle had to say on that topic. He goes, no offense to Corey Perry or Nick Foligno. They're not Jonathan Taves or Patrick Kane. Corey was a very, very good player at his peak, but just having those club legends is a little bit different. Opportunity with Nick and Corey, where they're here on shorter-term deals, gives other players runway to be those leaders and work alongside them rather than just have Jonathan and Patrick there, because they would be the leaders unquestioned, no doubt about it. And there would be somewhat of a roadblock there in terms of leadership development. In my opinion, having good vets on short-term deals allows some of the guys who might be here longer to jump into those spaces and therefore use Nick and Corey as resources and help solidify the culture in the locker room short-term. I know you thought Kane would be perfect for Bedard, and I think you can make a strong case for that. When you hear his response, again, this is just another package version of what we heard earlier when he made this decision. Are you on board with it or not?
Well, it's almost like three different conversations, right? Because okay. I do think that it's probably time for a variety of reasons for Johnny to be done, okay, with this organization. I don't think he'll be playing next year anyways. And it's – I think it's okay to move on from him. And so I get a little – I'm glad Ben Pope asked the question. I wish he would have made it just about Patrick Kane, because
I think you're absolutely right. These are separate conversations. Yes. Johnny's career kind of hangs in the balance. So to talk about him as a leader with right. everything that he's gone through in recent years, I don't think it's
he hasn't been able comparison. To do that role for a while, if we're
right.
being honest.
Right.
So Kane still being, you know, a very good player in the league, especially now he's going to have his hip fixed. I don't know if you've seen those videos.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit. I've watched him since. He's looking
schedule.
Pretty explosive. And he's a guy who has exhibited that, you know, where it's, yeah, like the Brinkett, Hartman, all these guys that he's Schmaltz. Been Schmaltz. Yeah. And knows how to push guys, knows how to be a good teammate, and is not overbearing, you know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with looking to a guy like that. So I hear Davidson, reasonable people can disagree. I still think Kane is, because there's certainly leadership things that you can learn from Corey Perry and you can learn from Nick Foligno. And I think having those guys in the fold is great. There is something to be said for on ice play and learning how to be a skilled player and a top player and all the little ways to create space, how to pick your spots, how to do all those things that Kane has learned over 15, 16 years and does it as well or better than just about anyone. So I think that there is that component. Like he would be perfect. Matt, a right shot center with Patrick Kane who can snipe it. I have been longing for that. I thought it was going to be Nick Schmaltz. I've been longing for that combo where a guy can have that, you know, they can do the hold up play at the line with the right shot center kind of pushing people back and setting up one timers. It's almost like it'd be Schmaltz and DeBrinket in one with Bedard. And it would have been magic on the ice. And I wish that they would have brought him back. I reject the notion that you can't develop as a leader because there's a guy like Patrick Kane there. Like that, to me, I think everybody has played team sports and been around and been watching sports long enough. Leaders always come to the forefront, regardless of who else is there. If you're a leader, you're going to be a leader. If you're not, it's not because there was some veteran in the room there too. So I just don't buy that. But like I said, I'm glad they have the guys they have. I do think that everybody would benefit from having Kane there too.
Yeah. You know, as long as Kane is here, it's his room. And I think as we look at it now, it's Connor Bedard's room in waiting. These are just veterans that are placeholders that are going to keep the culture going, teach a lot of the younger guys, including Connor, you know, how it is in the NHL. And I think that's great. Year one, year two, for Connor to see how a Tyler Johnson goes about his business, how Corey Perry, how Nick Foligno handles things. And I think you're going to see Connor Murphy and Seth take bigger roles as well. I don't think Patrick was demonstrative, and I don't think it was, you know, this is the way it just wasn't, you know, his actions spoke much louder than his words. Although he's very thoughtful when he talked about his player, about his teammates and about the team and things of that nature. So
well,
I'm in the same camp with you.
One other thing about that too. Don't you think it would be beneficial to have a guy like Patrick Kane in the locker room? So instead of having 20 guys with a microphone in Bedard's face after every game, actually, you know what? They're still going to want to talk to Kane, and Bedard can be an 18-year-old kid and focus on his game more because he doesn't have to be the focal point of every single post game, every single article, every single everything, because Patrick Kane is there to shoulder some of that burden because that's a benefit. And that's something that Seth Jones, Connor Murphy, Nick Foligno, Corey Perry, no offense to those guys, nobody cares what they have to say, if we're being honest. Everything is going to be focused on Bedard. The only guy who could have helped him shoulder some of that responsibility is Patrick Kane. And I think not bringing him back to help with that, aside from all the on-ice stuff that we've talked about, is an oversight by the organization. Yeah. I really do.
You also have to remember, they made this decision before they found out they were going to get Connor Bedard.
Right.
Which is really interesting when you think about it that way. That, like, to me, you can make a case that if you knew you had Connor Bedard coming in this year, that and you wanted a clean slate and you wanted to market him a certain way, and I mean that they decided this, I think you could make a strong argument as to why you possibly would want to part ways with Patrick. But if you were just going to get Will Smith or Leo Carlson or whoever with the third or fourth or fifth pick, I can make a case of what I would have liked to have had Patrick here for that type of thing.
Yeah, I actually think it's more having Bedard makes it more of a reason to have Kane. The marketing thing, like, figure it out. You know, like, I think you could come up with some 88 to 98, some kind of, you could come up with something that, you know, and they're going to market themselves, where if you draft one of the other guys.
But is that fair? Is that fair to Bedard?
Fair to Bedard? Yeah, he's 17. He'll have plenty of time. Fair to, and I think Bedard would tell you, like you said, he's humble and all this stuff. Well, if I make the team, all that, he hasn't earned anything. So fair right. to him, you take your rookie deal and start working, get to work.
Right, right.
So, you know, but I think insulating him from some of the pressure, and I think, you know, if you look, he's going to feel that. And I think having a guy like Patrick Kane in the locker room, in front of the microphone, answering the questions, being the captain, so it's not all on him, is a huge benefit. It would be a huge benefit to just let him be a rookie and let him be a kid, because there's going to be growing pains. As great as he is, there's going to be growing pains, and there's going to be tough questions and tough moments over an 82 game season against men. Having Patrick Kane there to just be like, hey, like I'll go talk to the media here. I'm the second star. You go back in the locker. I'm going to go talk to whoever's the ringside. You know, I'll talk to Panger after the game, all that kind of stuff that, you know, it's all, he has so much Bedard has so much responsibility now. And I do think having Kane would have really, made his transition easier as a professional and as a player.
There's no question he would have shielded Connor from some of the, the extra criticism or what have you, because while they are going to be probably better next year, I think they've taken a step back in goal. There's going to be some tough questions to be answered in that locker room over the next couple of years as expectations rise. You know, we're talking about this in this grandiose way of like how we think this lineup's going to look, you know, like another thing is seeing them go out there and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to your point about the Will Smith and all those guys aren't coming in next year. Fantilli could at Columbus, and maybe even probably will. But Smith is going to college, and you know, a lot of these other guys are, you know, Carlson's probably going to stay in Sweden for at least another year. And the only person that is and the expectations for those guys will never be what they are for Bedard. Bedard, you know, Austin Matthews came in opening night and scored four goals.
Yeah.
I do think that if Bedard, for whatever reason, gets off to a slow start, which is reasonable to expect because he doesn't even turn 18 until next month, that, you know, I think having to answer those questions, I'm just trying to figure it out, and having that pressure, I think, is a lot. And I think having Kane there would be great. So he's a free agent. If they want to pick up the phone, his hip's looking pretty good. So bring him in, have him play that role, put the C on his chest, and away we go. And I wonder if sometimes the organization even has a hard time separating 19 and 88. And if that's part of the equation here, it's like, how do we keep one and not the other? Maybe, you know, but to me, and then you traded him at the deadline before you knew. But that, you know, go get an asset. But it's clear that they don't want him back, which is I will never understand it. I'll never understand it. And, you know, I'm excited for the next era. And, you know, we had Davidson on and we didn't really ask him. Eddie asked him one question about Kane. But I could talk about this dynamic forever. And I just feel like I'll never get an answer that will satisfy me, that I'm like, okay, but reasonable people can disagree. I vehemently disagree with Davidson and whoever else is pushing that narrative.
We'll see if someday, I mean, I don't see any way in the near future that it happens, but we'll see if 88 ever comes back. I don't know. I'm holding out hope, but you know, yeah. Again,
sounds like it's a no.
What did you think of day two? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, it sounds like it's a no on Kane. It sounds like he's. Yeah. I don't even know how much desire he has to come back here after everything. So, you know, they could offer him, and I know he's keeping that house up there. I know that, but other than that, he's. You know, we'll see what he does. So. I don't think he's coming here, though.
All right, so day two of the draft, they take nine more players. They start the run on goalies by taking Adam Gajan, the Slovakian netminder, who was the best goalie at the World Juniors, who was, you know, on the other end of Bedard's overtime winner, Heartbreak Selly, in the quarterfinals. So they have a connection already. Were you good with that pick, and how did you kind of like day two, where they seemed to prioritize size in the middle to late rounds?
Yeah, middle to late, because second round was still, the forwards were smaller, more skilled guys, with the exception of, what was it, Messiak is like 6'2" or whatever.
Yeah,
but yeah, look, goalies, I am kind of the opinion that you should probably try to get one every draft, because you just never know. And taking one high and getting the first one, so the one that you like the best, because he's sitting there at 35, I think that's a good move, and it's going to take him a long time. So that, he was sensational in that World Junior, and he was kind of a late add-on to that Slovakian team, and then quickly became, he was supposed to be the third string guy, and was like, oh wait, no, this guy's actually the best, and everybody had passed on him. This is his second year as being eligible for the draft, so. I don't know how many times he get passed on, 400 times or something like that, in the 2022 draft. So, but he looks like a very good athlete. But you know, it takes time to hone those things in. He's going to Duluth, which is obviously a very good program. But his USHL, you know, he's not like an everyday starter in the USHL. He was kind of up and down in the NA the year before. So, but I think it's a good pick, and I have high hopes, but. You know, goalies, Corey Crawford, it took him until he was 26 to play in the NHL.
6 years in the minors.
Exactly. 2 years of junior after he got drafted, and then 6 years in the minors. So it'll take time, and it's just one of those, you stash it away. And like we said at the top, for me, because they got the two guys, two NHL guys in this draft for sure, everything else is kind of gravy. So if these guys don't make it or whatever, there's other ways to fill out your roster around your budding top six with Bedard, Reichel, Nazar, and more. Who knows if any of those four, including Bedard, will be a long-term center. So maybe those are your wings, and you go out and you get some veteran kind of bigger center to play down the middle and be more of like a playoff type look down the middle. And we'll see, but it's, there's a lot to be found out here in the next, you know, 3-4 years of what these guys are. But I can promise you they're going to be fast, and I can promise you they're going to be exciting. But how all the pieces come together, we'll see. So I think, yeah, adding size is good. But if one of those guys hits, it's a scratch off ticket, and
yeah, it's another, yeah. it's another a lot of win in a long line this year. Just yeah. Throwing the stats out on some of the guys they selected. Yuri Felkman, 6'4", 198. Alex Ferran, 6'3", 201. Marcel.
Love that name.
Love that name. Yeah. 6'4", 243. Holy
big
Nikes. Big guy, doesn't miss a meal. Milton Oskarsson, 6'6", 216. We got, maybe the Bulls could use him. So, I mean, like, yeah, like you said, these are shots at the, you know, yeah. This is throwing darts, and you hope you hit on one. And if
send
you don't,
them off
you don't.
To send them off to that Laura Stam skating school and see if we can turn these guys into NHLers.
Where do you think Corey Perry plays?
Fourth line. fourth line somewhere. I think
so. Like, and Foligno's on that fourth line too.
Yeah, I think maybe he might have some flexibility there, and Perry too. I'm sure Perry will get power play time on that, you know, on the second unit, or maybe he's a net front guy in the first one. He's still very good around the net. He just doesn't move the way that he used to. But he's a guy who's going to stand up for teammates and be a leader, and you know, and kind of be a deterrent. And you need guys like that. So I think he's, you know, he's definitely a bottom six guy and some power play help. And it's we'll see how it comes together. I'll tell you one thing though, I don't want to see him wearing number 10. I don't want to see him wearing number 10. Give that Sharpies, that Sharpies number. Give him something else. He can't wear 10.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Okay, so the draft picks, they flew back with the brass today from Nashville. Development camp is going on again. It's all off ice this weekend. Yep. Free agency starts tomorrow. The draft picks are going to be introduced to the media at 5 o'clock today. We're going to carry that, by the way, on NBC Sports Chicago. I'm going to be there to meet Bedard for the first time, so looking forward to that. Any other I don't think they're going to be really active. I don't in free agency. You know, I mean, I think they've kind of Perry and Foligno seem like the type of things that was their objective, and they've kind of handled that.
Yeah, I feel like the roster is kind of filled out. I mean, maybe you add another center somewhere in case, you know, you do want to start Bedard on a wing, but you know, they have Hall. They you know, they still have Jason Dickinson, who I thought had a pretty nice year last year, considering how they got him. Kurashev will be in the mix. Reichel's a full-time guy. See what you have in Tyler Johnson. Like, there's not that many spots. And I think the D is basically set too, because they brought back Tenorti, and they got, you know, they got Jones and Murphy, and then they got the kids. So I think the roster is pretty close, unless they want to go get like another Jason Dickinson type. And I don't even really know who's out there, because I haven't looked yet, because it's been all Bedard all the time. So
one of the funniest things I saw this week was Kyle Davidson with the penalty box radio there in Nashville. The thing went viral. I love a sense of humor with my GM, you know, like, and I think the fact that he's out on that walk with Jeff Greenberg, that they ask him to do it and he declines, walks, and he goes, "No, I'm going to go back and do it." And like, go F with him.
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. And how he kept a straight face for that duration of time is like, the guy's got acting chops.
Davidson nailed it. It was very fun. Would you rate your hockey knowledge? I don't know, 4.
So some people don't think I know much.
Yeah. But I thought he did very well there. My biggest problem with that was that what was the name of the company again?
Penalty Box Radio.
Penalty Box Radio. When they realized it after the fact, they're like, "Hey, Blackhawks, come get your GM or whatever." Like, you can't edit that after. Well, you can't have somebody like, "Hey, man," you just have to let that go out and then see the reaction, and then take it on the chin he was great. I didn't love the way that they presented it, but I thought Davidson did perfectly.
Yeah, I thought even at the end when Davidson, you know, and he admitted on Wednesday night that he told them, like, "Hey, I'm the GM of the Blackhawks."
Yeah.
The dude still didn't believe he was the GM of the Blackhawks. Like, where's the credibility for Penalty Box Radio? I mean. Right.
Well, we had Davidson on our show, and my co-host didn't believe that he was the GM of the Chicago Blackhawks. So White Sox Dave didn't. He's like, "This is the GM." Like, yeah. And
no, seriously, where's the GM?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, and then he was like, "Yeah," because Davidson's kind of a little guy, right? He's a smaller guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's kind of scrawny. And I'm like, "No, he's not, dude. Like, he's yoked." He's like, "Oh yeah," because Dave just likes to put everybody in a box like him. Like, he's a small, like, unathletic guy. I'm like, "No, Davidson's real strong handshake. He's in shape. Like, he's a fit guy." He's like, "Yeah, all right. Yeah." So, but yeah, I think but Davidson does, you know, he's done a pretty good job of, you know, for the most part, doing like the Belichick answers. He doesn't give a ton. Like, he keeps kind of a low profile, I would say.
Yeah. Well, look, it was a big week for the Blackhawks. We're both psyched about where the direction of this thing is going. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Hockey Show podcast. Make sure you follow Chief at Barstool Chief. Follow me at Boyle NBCS. And we'll be back on this platform anytime there's breaking Blackhawks news on ESPN Chicago. Catch you next time.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.